Committee on Rules. We're going to do bills that we've got a few House members here, and we like to get them out of our hair as quickly as possible, so we're going to do their bills first, and then we'll kind of wiggle through the agenda based on whatever. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3268. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us a little bit about the bill? We are officially in subcommittee until Senator Farioli arrives.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3268 requires DHS to provide 14 days notice to individuals before conducting a reassessment of eligibility for certain public services and assistance. There's no revenue impact and only a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay. Good morning, Representative Buckley. Why don't you tell us why we need this bill today?
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for allowing me to be here. It's a very simple bill. When DHS had to go through the cutbacks to senior and disabled services a few years back, there was no real system of communicating with seniors and disabled citizens on what the process was for evaluating their services. There was no communication process for their families or for their primary caregivers to be involved. We've worked with DHS since January to try to come up with a process that will not cost additional funding, but will allow for a communication process that will include primary caregivers as well as family members in the evaluation process, and to make sure that senior and disabled citizens understand what the process is all about.
Okay. Senator Atkinson, any questions? I think you're off the hook this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your short and sweet testimony.
All right. Thank you, Rep.
Anybody else wanting to testify on House Bill 3268? All right. Close the public hearing and open a... Let's see, where did Belizio go? Okay. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 225. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill? Representative Belizio, why don't you come forward? And again, for the record, we are officially in subcommittee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. House Bill 2995A requires persons who facilitate or make loans of refund anticipation loans to be licensed tax consultants or tax preparers, and it also requires them to make certain disclosures before processing or facilitating the loan.
Okay. Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. To be any shorter than Representative Buckley, I should do a haiku, but I don't think I'm able to do that. But
well, and besides, your bill's a little more complicated.
Okay, all right.
So you're off the hook.
All right. Larry Galizio, Representative House District 35, Tigard, Southwest Portland, King City. And to your, you know, sort of why do we need this bill, currently in Oregon, refund anticipation loans are they're virtually unregulated. And while most of us have heard of payday loans. In fact, this body has been working on payday loans. Less well known are these refund anticipation loans, often referred to with the ugly acronym RAL or RALs. And these are often referred to or sold as rapid refunds. So one of the issues with refund anticipation loans is that consumers don't even know that they are taking out a loan. And what they are they're high-cost, short-term loans secured against the borrower's income tax refund. And consumers, you know, pay three different fees for commercial tax preparation, to prepare the RAL, and then a loan fee to the lender, and often at very exorbitant interest rates. So the great thing about 2995 is it truly has been a collaborative effort. It's a bipartisan sponsorship with the chair of the Revenue Committee and others, worked with consumer groups, industry, advocates for the working poor and low-income Oregonians. So we managed to fashion what I hope to think is some kind of an enlightened compromise. And I think very significant with the refund anticipation loans is while only 17% of taxpayers receive the earned income tax credit, 57% of those taking out refund anticipation loans are EITC recipients. So you have, here we are trying to have public policy that helps the working poor, and yet by virtue of these loans, these refund anticipation loans, they're basically paying to borrow their own money. So again, they're virtually unregulated in Oregon. Senator Gordon Smith, among others, has introduced legislation at the federal level fairly recently, although that might take a little while to come through the legislative process. So really quickly, 2995 just is about transparency and disclosure. It says, number one, they have to be facilitated by a licensed tax consultant or preparer, that there must be written disclosure, including a table of the fees, the APR rates, and penalties. It has to state and identify that it is indeed a loan that you're taking out. And also, many consumers, or at least those taking out these refund anticipation loans, are unaware that they can do e-filing and direct deposit into their checking account, which is at a much lower cost. So this bill mandates that that option must be articulated or communicated to the consumer. And then also that the IRS doesn't guarantee the full refund, because what happens sometimes is people with child support or student loans, they don't get their full refund, and then they're on the hook. And it also provides for penalties for those not following these particular mandates. So, again, it's about disclosure and transparency, and we think it's something that's going to help consumers and the working poor. And also, I believe you should have a dash five. It's merely, there was a drafting error that was caught by legislative.
Just simply, it looks fairly grammatical to me.
Yes.
Okay.
Drafting error. So.
Okay.
I'd be glad to take any questions.
Thanks. Appreciate you bringing this to us. I see Matt Marquis from H&R Block would also like to testify. Any questions for Representative Galizio? Sarah Shields.
What was the House vote?
There was one vote against. If all 60 were there, I think it was 59-1.
Okay.
Representative Garrard. Not sure exactly what his... So, it passed overwhelmingly in the House.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Senator Ringo.
There's a hesitation I have on this, and I've talked with Representative Galizio about it, about the preemption clause, but I think it makes sense to accept that.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your hesitation.
Well, it had to do with the preemption part of this, but I think it makes sense to go ahead and accept that.
Okay. Can you explain why this was able to come through, sort of, what's the huge difference between this and the whole payday loan issues? This is sort of flown under the radar screen,
know,
so to speak.
Right, and I think this is a problem. They're less well known. Usually around tax time, you see these places that they call them rapid refunds.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't necessarily even think of them as a loan. So I don't know why, in terms of why policymakers, for example, who have been concerned. People who are concerned with payday loans also have been concerned with these refund anticipation loans. I think in terms of crafting policy, because they're a different animal, there needed to be a distinct policy approach. But it's affecting the same people, same concerns about being unregulated and these exorbitant interest rates. So.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Galizio. Mr. Marquis, why don't you come on up?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Matt Marquis representing H&R Block today. First, just want to thank Representative Galizio and Representative Butler and Senator Perzanski. All three of them have been working on this issue all session, and this House Bill 2995 has been a great product that we can all agree with and are all supportive of. As Representative Galizio said, it states out a detailed disclosure statement that is required to be given to all consumers that are interested in this product. It also creates civil penalties for anybody that does not disclose these disclosures. H&R Block currently does disclosures now. I think they are somewhat unique in the way that they go about offering this product to people. They currently tell everybody about all the options on a refund prior to offering them a loan and start by telling them about the free products. You heard a lot about the cost of these things. I just want to remind the committee that people tend to pay higher costs for things that are returned to them in a speedy manner. If you just take a simple instance like the mail service and you deliver something overnight over mail, it costs $13.50 to mail something overnight compared to 37 cents. So we all tend to pay for different things depending on when we want the money. I included my written testimony. I know you have a large agenda this morning. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but we are supportive of the bill.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Murphy? You got them early. Thank you. All right. Are you okay?
I'd like to have the time Sunday.
If I could have it. I didn't want to catch you. All right. I'm close the public hearing. Unless there's anybody else in the audience who wants to testify. And open a work session on House Bill 2995. The chair would move the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2995. They're purely changing the grammar as I read it. And I assume promoted by legislative counsel. Any discussion about the dash 5 amendments to 2995? No. Okay. Any objection to the amendments to House Bill 2995? Okay. Hearing, seeing none. So ordered. Chair would move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none. So ordered. Who would like to carry this?
On behalf.
Senator Ringo has been volunteered by his colleague. All right. Can you take a look at this bill? Let's see if you're okay with that. All right, let's go back up to the top of the agenda. Ms. Harris, House Bill 3363. I'm going to open a public hearing. And why don't you tell us about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. House Bill 3363A establishes minimum efficiency standards for certain new commercial appliances.
Thank you. Okay. Good. Everybody's on the same page. Mr. Craven, Mr. Bissonette, and Mr. Graney, why don't you come on up?
Energy.
You can all stay at the table without fighting. Go ahead. Whoever wants to start.
Madam Chair, I'll start. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jeff Bissonette for the Citizens Utility Board. Hopefully, in terms of length, we'll be somewhere between Representative Buckley and Representative Galizio. This is a bill that comes from the House on a 55-3 vote to set minimum energy efficiency standards for 11 products, most of them commercial products. Two of them have some residential application. Basically, this bill intends to set efficiency standards that have already been adopted in California. They were also just adopted in the state of Washington in their recently concluded legislative session. I think all committee members have information about the bill that I provided earlier. I'll let that stand as most of the testimony. I will note that we had an agreed bill coming out of the House. However, one of the agreements that we had was to remove some language that accidentally got left in there. And so we have dash A4 amendments to remove Section 8 sub 2 from the bill, and then removing any other referral to that in the rest of the bill that was agreed to in the House. It was just an inadvertent error that got left in. So we support the amendments. Representative Dingfelder has been a big proponent in the House, and she couldn't be here this morning, but wanted me to express thanks to Representative Atkinson for co-sponsoring this legislation. I'm sorry, Senator Atkinson went back in time there. Happy to answer any questions.
He needs all the butter he can get this morning. Thank you. Okay, next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy. We also support the bill. very briefly, states have the authority to adopt appliance efficiency standards in areas where the federal government has not done so, and these are areas, these are appliances that where that has not happened. I've got some handouts there that provide descriptions of the actual measures covered, including pictures of them, as well as estimates of energy and water savings. There would be substantial energy and water savings for the different appliances covered, with paybacks as short as a year or less in some cases. These are standards that California went through an extensive rulemaking before adopting, and by us adopting the identical standards for these equipment as California, it simplifies the choice for manufacturers. They can either do the current federal standards or the higher, more efficient California standards. Other states, like Washington and some of the states in the East, are also adopting the identical standards. So this is an attempt to make this workable for the manufacturers as well as to save energy and water from these equipment. The amendment that Jeff referred to was should the original bill as it was amended would have taken out some additional rulemaking authority and enforcement authority, which we thought was not necessary, and the A4s is just a technical amendment to be consistent with that, to take out some language that should have been taken out originally. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Mr. Craven.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association. I just want to say that I agree with the previous testimony. There was there were hearings in the House on this. There were some various business entities, including myself, who had some issues with the original printed bill. Those were dealt with in the House committee that considered this bill. And then after we all agreed and passed the bill, and actually the day of the floor debate, we kind of did a little oops. There was a little problem in Section 8. And so I think the people who raised issues in the substantive committee on the House side had those issues addressed. And really all the A4s do is fix something that we thought was fixed and we all kind of missed it prior to the floor debate. So we support the bill, Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Ringo?
Madam Chair, if we're adopting the California standards for dishwashers, why don't we do it for vehicles?
Only kidding.
Great question, wrong panel.
Great question.
Madam Chair, another question that maybe I would get an
one that our
to.
Panelists can answer, I
yeah.
hope.
Do you expect this to actually take some appliances off the market?
Madam Chair, Senator Ringo, I think maybe I could answer this another way. Our concern would be if we do not adopt the standards that with California and Washington having done so, Oregon could see an influx of the less efficient models because it's the only place in the West Coast where you could sell them.
I see. Does that apply to vehicles too? No.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Jeff,
Madam Chair, Senator Ringo, just to quickly follow up, there is time, however, between the time that this bill would pass and the standards go into effect, so that we don't catch any manufacturers or distributors short with stock left on hand, and we didn't want to do that. So there is time for those standards to go into effect to clear out some of those that stock.
Thank you.
I'm just trying to remember what brand my washing machine and dryer is, but I think all the water we save by the use of our washing machine is easily used up by my teenager's showers. They take forever. Sir Atkinson? You're going to have one day.
A dishwasher?
No, a teenager.
I can only hope my per diems will eventually stack up.
All right, Senator Shields, and then you have a question there for
I was going to suggest at least it makes keeping your teenager cheaper. But
I don't think so.
At the risk of sounding like a Republican here, if these
Look,
things have...
On your best day. Okay. Go ahead and try.
If These have a one-year payback, some of them. Why isn't everybody just lining up to buy them? I mean, what do you need the law for?
See?
I told you I was doing, huh?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Anybody want to take that on? I'm somewhat making playing devil's advocate, but you would think with that kind of payback that quickly, everybody would be buying these, and nobody would want to buy the less efficient models.
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, we try to do that, and we see some impact on through our tax credits on washing machines and dishwashers, for example, It definitely affects the market as a whole, what the standards are, and what the minimum level is of the equipment that's going to be offered. Some of these things, most of these things are not consumer products on the list. They're things like the exit signs in buildings. They're voltage regulators are things that are not are readily accessible to consumers. There are things that would be bought at the time buildings are being renovated or developed. They're probably not things that are at the top of the list of decision makers as they're planning their building. So these are things that, to the extent, I think standards really do make sense, because the consumer choice isn't really focused on those materials, with the exception of things like the commercial washing machines. And even there, the decision is made not by the individuals. It's made by the company that's supplying the apartment building, for example. It's that kind of sort of second level of decision making.
Thank you. That's helpful input.
Thank you.
When I think about a church that I used to have, it had 25 exit signs. I always wondered how much electric those things must be.
All right. Any other questions?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Farrioli.
Thank you. It's been a while since I've been into an appliance store, but most of the appliances that I see there already have a disclosure form pasted on the front indicating what the energy efficiency is, rating that energy efficiency, and they're displayed in a comparative fashion. So what, at least regarding the consumer issue, what does this add? And is that a federal requirement for the energy disclosure?
Madam Chair, Senator Farrioli, again, most of the equipment that's here is not the types of things you would buy in an electronic store, appliance store. The labeling, I believe, is required by federal law, and it, for the appliances, and it does provide good information, and it helps. In fact, it helps us for the equipment that qualifies for our tax credits. That labeling information is very helpful to the consumers, and in fact, the appliance dealers usually indicate on the same sheet whether it qualifies for the state tax credit or not. But these are things: the exit signs, the external power supplies, reflector lamps, metal halide lamps. These are things that, for the most part, are not off-the-shelf individual consumer choice items.
Any further questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. So I guess the confusing part for me about the presentation of the bill is that it's listed as at least accompanied with testimony that talks about the energy efficiency standards for appliances. And the testimony, at least the written testimony, really does focus on consumer products. But the bill talks about ballasts, ice cube makers, commercial television, commercial refrigerators, and digital TV adapters, high-intensity lamps,
bicycle washers,
halide lamps, pass-through cabinets, and et cetera. There's pages of new regulations that would apply. And I'm just wondering, and these are modeled on the California standards.
Madam Chair, Senator Farrioli, yes, they are identical. And we wrote the bill that way, with those specific standards in the bill, because of concerns that, you know, the agency through rules and regulations would make differences from California's. So these would be the identical standards. These equipment, or these items of equipment, while not considered normal consumer appliances, are technically appliances under federal law, so that's why we call them appliances. They're considered appliance equipment. And so if the federal government had standards, efficiency standards, for these items, this bill would not be before you today. But it does, these items do result with these changes in significant energy and water savings.
And I imagine that the enforcement mechanism will be through the retailers and the wholesalers. You'll publish the standards and tell them after a certain date these items won't be available or legal to sell in Oregon.
Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, that's correct. And one of the issues in the bill as originally introduced was it established a more extensive enforcement mechanism, actually through my agency, that a number of us were not particularly comfortable with, and that was taken out of the bill, so that this is simply the normal consumer protection standards that you would have in other statutes.
So the enforcement mechanism there will be by moral suasion or sharply worded letters?
Or perhaps whatever, Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, whatever sort of residual authority the Attorney General has for consumer protection generally.
Well, so let's suggest then that an unscrupulous retailer bootlegs a truckload of inappropriate tortillas, which I hear listed, and sells them out of in a shadowy little storefront operation in downtown, let's say Portland. What enforcement mechanism do you envision to stem the flow of these illegal tortillas into Oregon?
Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, this bill does not provide any added authority than there would already be under current law for selling illegal products in Oregon, whatever that law is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Madam Chairman, I've satisfied myself that I have a no vote on the bill, but thank you very much.
You're welcome very much. If you would get Senator Atkinson back in, we could move it. It's okay. I'll wait.
Madam Chair, just for the record, Senator Farrelly in his questions made a reference to digital television adapters, and those have been removed from the bill. I just wanted to state that
for the
record.
Version. I may have an old version.
Okay. Just wanted to state that for the record
you
so that nobody...
The tortillas left out of the A engrossed as well.
They're in there.
Okay.
That will Thank make you. Me rest easier this evening, Madam Chair.
My goal is to make sure you sleep at night.
Thank you.
On that happy note, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3363. We'll wait till Senator Atkinson returns. Chair would open a work session on House Bill 3268A. There are no amendments to the bill. Chair would move the bill to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing seeing none. So ordered, Senator Shields, you can carry. Please.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much. All right. Let's move to 2113. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill?
Madam Chair, Committee, House Bill 2113A deletes requirements for certain reports submitted by the Oregon Department of Transportation to other public bodies.
Thank you. Any amendments to the bill?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. At least that we're aware of. Mr. Marsh, come on up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Marsh from the Department of Transportation. Our staff has met with the members or their staff to discuss this bill. I can do a quick three-minute summary if the chair would like.
That'd be great. We actually like to have public hearings on bills in the Senate side.
So, again, Mike Marsh from the Department of Transportation on House Bill 2113. This is a request from the department to change a number of statutes that relate to reports coming out from the department and to ensure continued accountability, but to streamline the reporting process. In summary, what the bill does is delete four reports which have little or no value. Those reports relate to a director's report to the Oregon Transportation Commission. There are many reports and discussions that already occurred between the director and the commission. Formal annual report is not required. A snowmobile fund methodology report that discusses how we do our calculations of the snowmobile fund. We're happy to give that information to anyone. Don't need to have an annual report on that subject. A report on safety that talks about the amount of dollars that go into safety. Most of our projects do relate to safety. And then there's a rail rehabilitation fund report. There's no money in the rail rehabilitation fund, and therefore no reason to have a fund report. The other area is four reports that remain with the statute, but we take out of the statute the precise specifications about how the fund or how the reports would be done. Those relate to cost accounting and program budget, which are already structured within the appropriation bills that come out of the legislative session. Then we have the highway construction plan and the quarterly status report, which are already done, and we want to continue doing them but not have specific chapter headings within the statutes. And then we have an addition, which is one additional report, which relates to an audit report, which would be done annually, and then also taking out one other reference, which relates to appropriation bills, which already control the fund accounts within the Oregon Transportation Department budget. So, Madam Chair, that's the quick hit. Bottom line is we want to maintain the accountability within the statutes, but to allow for things to be updated and recognize when reports are no longer necessary and we can be streamlining the process.
Great. Questions for Mr. Marsh? Appreciate your section-by-section analysis as well. Anybody else in the audience wishing to testify on House Bill 2113A? Okay. Close public
Chair.
Hearing. Thank you very much. Oops. We'll see if Sarah Atkinson's going to come back before I move into work session. Let's open a public hearing on 2228. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill?
I believe that that's the Oregon Law Commission bill.
We are still in
the judiciary.
All right. We'll move on to the next one as well, the Law Commission bill 2276.
Oh, you know what?
That's the law.
It's 2276.
Okay. All right. Okay. House Bill 2228.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2228 specifies the form of bond letter that's required of a mail agent, and it authorizes the Attorney General to bring actions against mail agents to recover damages that result from failure to comply with statutes governing the conduct of mail agents.
M-A-I-L.
M-A-I-L.
Mr. Is it Rayborn?
Layborn.
Okay. Come on up. Welcome to your Senate Rules Committee. And maybe in an hour or so they'll open the curtains so we can realize that it's morning outside.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ross Layborn. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, serve as Attorney in Charge of the Department's Charitable Activities Section. One of the things that my section does is enforce the Charitable Solicitations Act, which, of course, prohibits false and misleading representations in the course of charitable solicitations. The bill before you deals with the subject of mail agents, which is the statutory term for individuals that own and operate private mailboxes. And while there may be very many legitimate uses of those private mailboxes, out-of-state scam artists are prone to use these boxes to conduct business in Oregon. They'll obviously solicit from out-of-state, but when you receive the solicitation, the material will direct you back to a local address, and the idea is to convince the Oregonian that you have a local presence when, in fact, you really don't. This is not a new problem or new issue. In 1991, the legislature passed a fairly exhaustive piece of legislation to regulate mail agents, and it did three things. It imposed a $10,000 bond. It required certain statutory responsibilities for mail agents in terms of how they carried out their business. And then it gave the Attorney General some oversight authority and created a private right of action for injured Oregonians. The bill before you attempts to remedy what we perceive to be a couple of defects in that legislation. One is that for whatever reason at the time, the legislation did not prescribe detailed information about the bond. That's normally, if you look at the bonding statutes throughout the Oregon Revised Statutes, you will typically see a description of what activity is covered, who the bond runs to, who is to approve the form of the bond, and most often that letters of credit may be substituted for the bond. So this simply adds that kind of language to the already existing statute. The other addition is that although there is a private right of action for the injured donors and consumers, as a practical matter, most of these scams involve a fair amount of money, but only modest contributions or payments by Oregon citizens. And so the private right of action is not a particularly effective remedy, and all of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act and other pieces of consumer legislation, this would propose to give the Attorney General the authority to seek damages on behalf of injured consumers. The bill passed overwhelmingly in the House, and I urge your support.
Great. Thank you very much. Great testimony. Senator Ringo, any questions?
Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yesterday we were listening to testimony by an agency or on behalf of creating a new authority within an agency, and it was relatively clear. As a matter of fact, it was testified on the record, too, that there would probably never be a prosecution. So I guess I need to know what's the likelihood of violators actually being prosecuted in Oregon if we create this authority?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, very, very high. You know, what's, I think, I can tell you that there have been instances, and how we kind of came to this issue was that we were intending to, in effect, pursue under the Act until we realized that, number one, we couldn't get damages for our consumers, and number two, that the mail agent didn't have a bond because the sureties don't know how to issue a bond.
And are we certain that the bonds that we're requiring are readily available in the market?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, I'm not, you know, an expert when it comes to bonds, but as I say, I mean, number one, we're not changing the size of the bond. It's a $10,000 bond. Number two, the language that you see inserted here is the same language that is essentially throughout probably anywhere from 20 to 50 bonding statutes, and I'm assuming that in those other areas that those bonds are being issued. But I don't have any first-hand knowledge.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious about the two details that I see. You know, first, we're making a requirement. We're assuming the bonds are available. And we're creating an enforcement authority, and we're assuming somebody's going to do the enforcement.
Well,
I am convinced by the testimony that there was at least an attempt to do a recovery, so I'm assuming that that would be a priority of the department if we create the authority.
Good question, sir. Very early. And you got very lawyerly answers. All right. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Laybourne. Appreciate you joining us this morning. Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2228? Okay. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2228. And I see Law Commission folks back in the room. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2276. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill? Ms. Johnson, why don't you come on up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2276A requires the Oregon Supplemental Income Program to provide supplemental cash payments to recipients of SSI and other special need allowances for one-time or ongoing needs to eligible persons.
Hi, Ms. Johnson. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Wendy Johnson, for the record, Deputy Director of the Oregon Law Commission. This is the first time the Law Commission has been before the Rules Committee, so thank you for scheduling this bill. This is an area that the Law
Commission... Hang on just a second. Everybody have a pretty good understanding of who the Law Commission is? Okay. Senator Farrioli? Okay.
What, am I signed up for Remedial Law Commission?
No. Frank nodded his head. Charlie's on Judiciary,
I
so
rolled
I knew
my
he
eyes.
Knew.
I thought you knew what that meant.
Well, your response was extremely subtle. Mm. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Brown. Members of the
subtle around here.
All right.
Members of the committee, again, this is what we have called the Welfare Code Reform Bill. Members from the community who represent clients who receive benefits ask for a total reform of all of DHS chapters regarding welfare. For this session, that was a daunting task, and so we took on the two simplest chapters. And what you have before you is a collapse of chapters 412 and 413, totally deleting those two chapters and keeping the relevant provisions that actually are used and putting them in 411. What the two chapters had originally were programs to provide supplemental income for blind persons, disabled persons, and old age assistants. We have to keep those supplemental income program pieces in order to keep Medicaid benefits. You'll be shocked probably to learn how much that the benefit really is. It's $1.70 per month for disabled persons and old age assistants, and people who are blind get an extra $26.70 a month. This has been around since, I believe, the 70s and has to be kept in statute to keep the Medicaid benefits. So all we have done in this bill is delete a lot of arcane, politically incorrect terminology, and a lot of the programs that DHS no longer provides deleted those provisions. And so when a person actually opens the statute, they can understand what the program is, and the rest of the material is deleted. It has no fiscal impact on the bill. It passed the House with no votes. It's a good bill, and we recommend an aye vote. That sounds like a floor speech. Thanks again.
Okay. Thanks. Oh, wait a second. There might be questions. Senator Shields?
Ringo?
Senator Farrioli, any questions? Okay, you're off the hook.
Thanks.
All right. Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2276? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2276 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2303. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2303A allows the Building Codes Division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to amend certain codes in consultation with the Mechanical Board or Building Code Structures Board to ensure that those codes are compatible with the low-rise residential dwelling code.
Mr. Bradford, before you get started, I was looking for Mr. Cross, but I don't see him. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jared Broadfoot here today on behalf of the National Electrical Contractors Association to testify in support of House Bill 2303 and in support of the Dash A3 amendments. Actually, House Bill 2303 was Mr. Cross's bill, who he then allowed us to add an amendment to it to deal with the issue that we thought we dealt with last session.
Okay.
So I'll explain if...
Well, and he is just coming in, so if you want to wait, that'd be great. Oh, that's okay.
Chair Brown and committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Building Officials Association. We've been working with some of the stakeholders on legislation to address the code adoption process and to try and make Oregon's code adoption and codes which are based on national model codes more compatible with those national models. And this legislation, in Section 1, we have new language that would enable the administrator for the Building Codes Division to work with the Mechanical and Structural Boards on making code changes to our residential code to enable that code to be more compatible with the national codes. So, and it's one that, as I say, we've worked with the division on, the other stakeholders. It passed unanimously on the House side, and it's a, what I would call somewhat of a technical bill, but it would provide for more uniformity in our codes as they match up with other states in the country.
Okay. Mr. Broadfoot?
Thank you again, Jared Broadfoot with the National Electrical Contractors Association. Our section of the bill deals with electrical products, product installations and sales and certification. It's very technical, but the gist of it is that we do not feel, the electrical industry doesn't feel, that the Building Codes Division should be in the business of certifying toasters, for instance, and the Building Codes Division supports us in that. We want to focus them specifically on products that that require a permit. We dealt with this issue last session, and the focus was, for instance, a widget maker at Intel that is a one-of-a-kind machine that the Building Codes Division or the Electrical and Elevator Board was responsible for certifying that product when it was already in pieces certified, listed, UL listed, and then put together. We worked with Intel and the Electrical Industry and Building Codes Division to, we thought, solve that problem. This is just, we've realized in the interim that we did not fix it completely. So we've come back, amended it in the House bill on the House side. Once the bill passed the House side, we had the Building Codes Division look at it. There was a few technical word changes that needed to be made, so that would be the A3 amendments. The other part of the A3 amendments, you'll see the Section 7 on the amendments, we're deleting two paragraphs of statute. And the reason we're doing that is we passed another bill that's already been passed by the Senate and sent to the governor's desk. Was House Bill 3016, where we dealt with a problem that we found was when a local jurisdiction raises their fees, they are required to give notification to the Building Codes Division, so stakeholders, the electrical industry, plumbing industry, has knowledge and can attend the hearings. Well, under current law, if they mess up a little bit and sort of notify, there can be an appeal. But if they completely ignore the law and don't notify, there's really nothing in law that allows them to allows our contractors to appeal. So we fixed that through House Bill 3016, but forgot, as Building Codes pointed out, to delete two sections of statute. So that's the A3 amendments are really cleanup amendments, and we have ran the amendments by the chair of the House committee, and he said if the Senate passed the bill with the amendments, that he would concur on the amendments.
Okay, thank you. We can take your word for it.
Right,
that certainly helps us. Questions? I think we're all in favor of deleting unnecessary statutes. So, all right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your consideration.
Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2303? Not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2303. That concludes our public hearing agenda for the day.
Yahoo.
At least for the morning. Since Sarah Atkinson has returned, let's go back up and open a public hearing on House Bill 3363. Public hearing work session on House Bill 3363. Amendments, Senator Atkinson?
What number are they? Move the amendments. The dash five.
Okay. Dash five.
Madam Chair,
dash four.
There's
four.
Wild
dash
gesticulation four. From the folks from the Department of Energy.
All right. Get your head in the ball game, Sarah Atkinson.
Dash I'm just
four.
These guys a little.
Senator Atkinson has Senator Atkinson has moved the dash four amendments to House Bill 3363. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Sarah Atkinson.
I'd move the bill.
Sarah,
as amended with the dash fours to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Sarah Atkinson, for your very explicit motion. Sarah Atkinson has moved House Bill 3363 as amended with the dash four amendments to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
In the less than immortal words of Jared Broadfoot testifying in the previous bill, the state of Oregon should not be in the business of regulating toasters.
Okay.
Well, Senator Farrelly, does that mean you're objecting?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Huh. Boy, that changes me.
Madam Chair?
Senator Ringo?
I think he said the building codes division shouldn't be regulating
toasters. I personally prefer that my toasters are safe and energy efficient. Correct. Ms. Kinson, why don't you call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ferriola?
No.
Chair Brown?
Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Would you like to carry the bill? You don't have to.
It's his bill.
We can give it to Senator Ringo if you don't want to.
I'll carry it.
Okay, Sarah Atkinson will carry.
I'm excited for the passionate floor speech.
You think we can get him an honorary toaster for the
event? I should have some extra.
Okay. Thank you. Open a work session on House Bill 2113, deleted requirements for certain reports by the Department of Transportation. There are no amendments to this bill, correct?
Which bill?
2113.
That is correct.
Senator Atkinson.
Move the bill to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Atkinson has moved House Bill 2113 to Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Chair would open a work session on House Bill 2228 regarding special form of bond or letter of credit required of mail agent. The chair would move the bill to the Senate floor for the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Senator Ringo, that's right up your alley. Why don't you carry that bill?
Oh, okay.
I did a carrier for the DOT bill.
No, you didn't.
I'll do it.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Sarah Atkinson.
Sure.
All right. Chair opens a work session on House Bill 2276. No amendments. It was a law commission bill. Any discussion on the bill? Chair would move the bill to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none. So ordered. Senator Shields, why don't you carry that bill?
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Chair would open a work session on House Bill 2303. I would move the -3 amendments. House Bill 2303. Any objection to that motion? So ordered. Chair would move the bill as amended with the -3 amendments to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Senator Farrelly, would you be willing to carry that bill?
Yes.
Don't get so excited. We have a few bill drafting requests today.
Oh, for crying out loud. What on earth?
He's going to extend the session.
No.
What on earth are we drafting?
All right. I'm going to move. Let me walk you through each one of these. Chair would move.
Run us through it.
The drafting and introduction of an amended redraft of House Bill 2484. It moved out of the Senate Environment Committee before folks could get an amendment tucked into it. The chair would also move a redraft and introduction of Senate Bill 347-2. This is a request at Senator Morris, and it's dealing with water analysis for Department of Human Services. And the third bill I would move for drafting an introduction is a bill related to Government Standards and Practices Commission. It's dealing with their funding. It's a request of the chair, co-chair of Ways and Means. Again, your vote in support of this motion does not signify your support or opposition of the substance of the measure, and I can guarantee you that none of these bills will delay the end of the session.
Can what?
I can guarantee you that the drafting and introduction of these three bills will not delay the end of session. Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? So ordered. We'll see you all back here this afternoon. Thank you very much for your cooperation.
See you all back here
at the ranch. That's right.
What?
See you.